I'm William O'Flaherty, author of C.S. Lewis Goes to Hell, A Companion and Study Guide to the Screwtape Letters. And you're listening to All About Jack, a podcast feature of EssentialCSLewis.com. All About Jack is also part of the Theology Mix podcast network. With me on the show for the first time is Dr. Alan Snyder. He is professor of history at Southeastern University in Lakeland, Florida, and author of 5 books at last count. In 2016, his only book so far directly related to C.S. Lewis came out. If you were to browse his website, PonderingPrinciples.com, you would be able to easily determine which one it is. The title is America Discovers C.S. Lewis. You can also probably figure out the angle of the book, but let me welcome my guest and have him give us some details. So welcome to All About Jack, Alan.
Thank you for the invitation. I really appreciate it.
Well, now, so what's the big deal about the U.S. finding out about C.S. Lewis? Is there really that much to discuss to justify a book on the topic?
Well, that's what I had to find out. What happened was I was on a cruise actually a couple of years ago, and I was reading Alistair McGrath's biography of Lewis. And in the last chapter, he made a comment that kind of stuck out to me. He said that Lewis has always been more popular in America than he was in his native Britain. And he went on to talk a little bit about that, but it was not a full treatment of it. But I was really kind of, that kind of piqued my interest. And I wondered, why is that true? Is it true? I would like to look into this a little bit more. Of course, being a full-time professor at a Christian college, you don't have much time to look into much of anything because you're busy teaching lots and lots of courses. But the nice thing is Southeastern University gave me a sabbatical back in 2014 and 15, so I had a year off where I could look into some things. I had another colleague there. I'm working with him, kind of a project on spiritual advisors to the president. So I went to a number of presidential libraries during that time. But I also went to Wheaton College, to the Billy Graham Center, to look at some documents there. While I was there, I realized what a wonderful opportunity I had. The Wade Center was just on the other side of campus. And of course, that houses all of C.S. Lewis's works, as well as everything written about him. So I went there for a few days and was helped tremendously by the people there to find everything that I could that was written about his connections with America, what Americans think of him, what he thought of them, everything I possibly could. And all I found were a few articles, a one-day seminar that Wheaton had put on, some testimony scattered throughout certain books, but no one book that brought it all together. So I decided with this sabbatical, why not go ahead? And so my goal was to research as comprehensively as I could Lewis's connections to Americans, how he influenced them, and along the way try to figure out, you know, why McGrath's comment is true. One of the things I did was I read all of Lewis's letters to Americans to try to get a real feel for things. So that's how it started anyway.
Well, as you point out, Lewis has had an enduring influence, is one of the phrases you use in your book, in America. But before going deeper into that, how did Lewis view the United States itself?
Well, that was something I definitely had to deal with right from the start, because there are these ideas out there that Lewis really didn't like America. He didn't like Americans. And so I needed to find out, you know, if that was really true. I think what we needed to do, and the research kind of pulled this out, you have to make a distinction between what we might call a young, opinionated Lewis prior to his conversion and the later Christian Lewis, who did have contacts with Americans. If you read some of the letters, the young Lewis was at times rather arrogant. He made a number of negative comments about Americans, but, you know, nobody stays the same throughout their life, especially when they do have the kind of conversion that Lewis did. And then he starts connecting with more Americans along the way. He also noticed that some Americans seem to be far more receptive to his writings. A couple of the letters made it clear that Perelander in particular was one that Americans seemed to really latch onto, and that was great to Lewis because that was the favorite thing he wrote until he later wrote Till We Have Faces. So that's just one example. And then, of course, he married an American, and then later Walter Hooper comes over in the last few months of Lewis's life and works closely with him. Lewis wanted him to be his personal secretary. That would have happened if not for Lewis's death intervening. And Hooper then, of course, becomes the executor of the Lewis Literary Estate. So if there's anything about Lewis's connections with Americans or dislike of Americans, I would say that most of that dissipated over time, and he really came to appreciate, especially through his correspondence with Americans, you know, what they were really like.
Except for those who are very familiar with Lewis, few are aware who it was that helped America find out about the person so many know now as the author of Narnia. Who first wrote about Lewis, and what can you tell us about him?
Interestingly, that was an American. His name was Chad Walsh. He was a professor of English at Beloit College in Wisconsin. Walsh grew up actually in a kind of a reaction against Christianity, and he became an atheist. He went away to college, and long about the time Hitler came along in Germany, he began rethinking his atheism, especially when he saw some of his atheist friends say, well, you know, there's no absolute right or wrong, and so if Hitler feels this way about things, that's his right and his wrong. And that kind of shocked Walsh. And so he started thinking more seriously about the eternal things. And he started reading some Lewis, and Lewis made a major impact on him. In particular, when he read Perelandra, Walsh comes up with this phrase. He says it was like it baptized his imagination. And he became so fascinated with Lewis's writings that he wrote an article in a journal called Lewis to the Skeptics, which then he decided to make into a book. So he went over to Oxford and he met Lewis for the first time. They had a number of good conversations, and he ended up writing the book, which is the first book ever really written, a first book-length analysis of Lewis by anyone. And it was called, you know, Lewis, Apostle to the Skeptics, came out in the late 1940s. And then they became friends. It wasn't just a one-time thing. They became correspondents back and forth throughout the rest of Lewis's life. So, interestingly enough, it was an American who first wrote the first book about Lewis and then brought Lewis to the attention of other Americans.
Well, and as you mentioned, this was the late 40s. This was, again, before Narnia. So here we have a book about Lewis because of a growing interest in him before Narnia, and yet today he's most known for Narnia. That's I've always found that fascinating, or few people really realize that.
Right, right.
Well, now, let's go ahead and pause from focusing on your book, which again is called America Discovers C.S. Lewis, and have you tell a little bit about yourself. First, tell more about what you do as a professor of history, and then how you came to enjoy Lewis so much.
Well, I've been a history professor now for about 28 years. Actually, it came a little late in my life. I didn't start being a full-time professor until I was 38. So some of you might out there might want to add that up and see how old I am. But I can say that my experience teaching has primarily been American history, and I always wanted to do something with Lewis. I didn't really know much about Lewis until I went to college myself. And probably, I can't remember exactly what I read the first time, but it might have been the science fiction trilogy. I do know that my undergraduate degree, which was in radio, TV, and film production, not history, allowed me some creative parameters here. So what I did in my TV production course that I took, I took a little segment out of Lewis's The Great Divorce, and I staged that with spotlights on one person from hell and one person from heaven. It was a very interesting thing to be able to do. Now, later I did switch to history. And like I said, my focus has always been on American history. But I always wanted to write something about Lewis. And I figured, how can I do that when I'm an American historian? But by being able to say, how did Lewis appreciate America? Well, how did America discover Lewis? I found a pretty good way of bringing that together. So I teach my American history courses, but I have this very specialized course I teach now on C.S. Lewis, which is really a joy to be able to do.
Well, that sounds interesting. I wish I have an opportunity to maybe peek in on your class there. And speaking of your book, of course, here, which we're getting back into, I did enjoy the opportunity to read just about all of it and did find it very, very fascinating. But now, related then to your book, what was the biggest challenge in writing it, and what did you say maybe enjoy the most about the process or even the end result?
Well, the first challenge was the commitment I made to try to read all the letters that Lewis wrote to Americans. I felt like I couldn't really get this book out there unless I had actually done that. although I call that the first challenge, I also have to say it might also have been the biggest joy, because to be able to sit during a sabbatical year in your study and just look at the collected letters of C.S. Lewis and just work my way through them and take notes, for someone like me, that's probably one of the most enjoyable things you can do. I also reread as much Lewis as possible during that year, and then I started branching into writings that I'd never gotten to before, so I appreciated the opportunity that year to be able to do that. Another challenge was to be able to complete the writing before the sabbatical ended, because I knew that once I had to go back to full-time teaching, being able to write would be at a premium, finding the time to do so. So I was able to do that. And then the third challenge, of course, is finding a publisher. And I did have an agent for a while. What's interesting to me is that at the beginning, I thought a Lewis book, there's going to be a lot of people out there who want to, you know, publish a good Lewis book. The agent told me right from the start, and he was very accomplished at finding publishers for Lewis books. He said, it's been hard lately. I haven't been able to place books very easily. He said, so maybe the market is glutted with Lewis books at this time. So he said, we go into this not knowing if it's actually going to happen. And I said, well, that's okay. Go ahead and try. And I discovered he was right. A lot of the publishers said, oh, we just have too many or this or that. Mm-hmm. So I ended up going with Wippenstock. But I'm very pleased, because Wippenstock is not just some publisher that will publish anything. They look at things and they say, look, if something is worth publishing, and some publisher out there didn't think it was going to sell 15,000 copies in the first year, you know, we're interested in it, and so we'll gladly take that on. So I do appreciate that. It was kind of a journey trying to find a publisher, but when it happened, I've been very pleased with the result.
Yes, I've had that experience myself, having just won the book, my C.S. Lewis Goes to Hell, about the Screwtape Letters, and then I've got a few other ideas, and we may have actually been talking to the same agent. We can confer later, but basically, unless it's going to sell so many copies, the publishers are like, well, and you know, rightly so, it does cost them quite a bit to publish something. And so it's great when there's others that are willing to do that.
Of course, every author believes that his book should be a bestseller, you understand?
Right. Yeah, I thought in the first month I would have at least 15,000 go out there, but it may take a few years for that.
Understood.
Now, in the third and fourth chapter of your book, you discuss Lewis's eventual wife, Joy, and then the Walter Hooper. While not a lot has been written about their lives technically, there is material out there, either directly or indirectly, of course, more directly with Joy. So my mm-hmm. question is, for either of these subjects, how did you determine what to include versus what was less important to detail?
Well, of course, with my narrowed focus on America and Lewis, I was not intending to ever do my complete biographies of either one of those individuals. And of course, I can't compete with what Abigail Santa Maria has done with her new biography on Joy, which is really very excellent. So I do recommend that. But I did want to focus on how Lewis influenced her, brought her from being a communist atheist. It was always kind of interesting. She was a Jewish atheist communist. And a lot of people.
Yeah, what a combination.
Yeah, what a combination. He's like, can you find, you know, things that's so opposite of Lewis other than that? How more opposite can you get? But of course, she was influenced by Lewis. She read a lot by him, helped bring her around. And of course, since she was an American, obviously that's what I wanted to focus on, what impact, you know, she had on his life and vice versa, how that might have, you know, broadened his views of Americans. So the chapter on Joy will have a decent amount of biographical information, but at the same time, the focus is going to be primarily on that relationship and what that meant. When it comes to Walter Hooper, the nice thing was, Walter is still with us. And even though I've never met him personally, the Wade Center helped me get in touch with him. And so he was, through email, we've been doing some back and forth communicating. And he sent me some of the things that he thought would be most germane to the topic that related to him and included his own personal history. So again, I concentrated on those parts that showed how Lewis, you know, immediately impacted his life when he started reading Lewis, the kind of relationship they developed in just those very few short months when they knew each other. And then his role later as the executor for the Lewis Literary Estate. So again, it shows the connection with an American. Now, I haven't met Hooper yet, but I'm actually taking students on a trip to England in May, and we've been in contact, and when we go to the Kilns, we're hoping to meet up there. So I'm really looking forward to that happening.
Yeah, he is very nice. I had the opportunity. I don't know if the listeners have already heard my interview with Walter Hooper. I had my first visit to England last July, and the arrangements were worked out for me to visit him actually in his home and interview him. He is very, very nice.
That's everything I've heard about him, yes.
And then, of course, you were noting about Abigail Santa Maria's book about Joy, the biography. I had the opportunity to interview her. I'll have probably links in the show notes, or people can do a quick search on the interview site to listen to that. Well, now, again, your book, America Discovers C.S. Lewis, your next couple chapters after the ones we were just referencing, focuses on the academic people from the United States and, quote, regular American correspondents. Highlight some of what you cover and also comment on who you included and why them versus maybe others you could have.
I mean, there were so many people that Lewis corresponded with. I had to kind of narrow it down. And with the academics, I just wanted to focus primarily on those that, first of all, that Lewis had either met personally or corresponded with significantly. And then later, some, you know, academics who came along after Lewis died, but who have been truly impacted by him. A couple that I spent quite a bit of time on in that one chapter, first of all, would be Sheldon Van Auken. Obviously, a lot of the professors he connected with were literature professors. Van Auken was over in Oxford studying, and that's he was an atheist at the time. And really, it was his relationship with Lewis that led him to the Lord. And of course, it's the most personal story, I think, of all of them, because Lewis became good friends with Van Auken and his wife, Davy. And of course, a lot of people have read Van Auken's really excellent book, A Severe Mercy, which talks about how Lewis did impact his life and how Lewis helped lead him through reacting to the death of Davy, his wife. And so that one takes up a pretty good, you know, section of that particular chapter. And I think it's very important to focus on that one. Also, I spend a good amount of time on Clyde Kilby, who was the literature professor at Wheaton during this time, who did meet Lewis personally and then corresponded with him. And of course, Kilby is known as the great C.S. Lewis collector. He's the one who brought together all the material for the Wade Center about Lewis, or at least started that collection anyway, because after Lewis died, then he became good friends with Lewis's brother, Warney, and Warney decided to turn over all the materials over to Wheaton College, which then, of course, eventually set up the Wade Center. So Kilby's role in that is extremely important, so I wanted to focus on that. Other people in America that Lewis impacted might not be quite so much in the academic realm, but are well known, you know, different Christian authors and so forth. But one of them that I spent the most time on in that chapter was Chuck Colson. Colson obviously is somebody that a lot of people are familiar with because he worked in the Nixon administration, the whole Watergate thing that happened in the 1970s. And Colson was caught up in that, but by being caught up in it, he actually was led to read Mere Christianity by Lewis, and that was so instrumental in turning his life around, and he became a very devoted Christian, went to prison for a while, and when he got out, of course, he started the wonderful ministry known as Prison Fellowship, which still is in existence today and does great things bringing the gospel inside the prison. So I wanted to be able to focus on someone like that as well. Now, when it comes down to the regular correspondents, most of these are, you know, people nobody's heard of. But there were some really key ones, like Warfield Feror. He was actually a renowned surgeon at Johns Hopkins, and they had a lot of correspondents. Feror is probably known best for sending hams to Lewis and the Inklings in the time period after World War II when rationing was underway. And they really loved receiving those hams from him. And he actually went over and met with the Inklings and was at one of their meetings. Then there was a woman by the name of Vera Gebert, who was probably the most prolific sender of gifts during that time period. What's interesting is, while I was writing the book, I didn't realize that Vera Gebert was still alive. But when I finished writing it, then I found her obituary because She died in December of 2014, just as I was finishing writing the book. It would have been very fascinating if I'd had an opportunity to be able to sit down and talk with her, but that just didn't happen. There was another woman by the name of Mary Van Dusen, who was really someone on a spiritual and intellectual level with Lewis, and he really enjoyed corresponding with her. Mary Willis Shelburne, it was the person behind that first collection of Lewis letters that came out called Letters to an American Lady back in the 1960s. And then there were key children that Lewis wrote to that I decided to focus on, too, and some of the advice that he gave them. He really had a knack for knowing how to write to children. Of course, we kind of know that from the Chronicles of Narnia.
Right, exactly. Very, very good in that area. Well, now your next to last chapter details how Lewis influenced lives based on three surveys. What are some of what the readers can find there?
Well, when I went to the Wade Center, I discovered that there had been two surveys done previously about Americans' reactions to Lewis. One was in 1986, one was in 1996. So I was able to read through all of those responses that they got during that time as to how Lewis had impacted their lives. But the thing is, those particular surveys were just open-ended. They just say, you know, give us some comments about Lewis and how he has influenced you. I decided what we need is a more updated survey of how Americans now think about things, because, you know, it's 20 years ago, the last survey like that was done. So I was able to work with the Wade Center, which I really appreciate, and they publicized my survey on their sites. And what I did was I wanted to be more precise. Instead of just saying, how about an open-ended kind of commentary on Lewis, I asked very specific questions. I said, first of all, please tell me about your first contact with Lewis. How did you come to know about him? Then I said, now, please tell me what are the most significant writings that have impacted your life from Lewis. I also asked about any connections people had to Lewis societies and other organizations. And I then asked opinions on the Lewis movies, the Shadowlands movie by Hollywood, as well as the BBC production earlier, you know, kind of comparing the two. And, of course, the three Narnia movies and other possibilities for Narnia, too. So it was nice getting that kind of feedback on specific questions. But then at the end, I then just opened it up to any other comments that people wanted to make. And so that particular chapter draws from all three surveys. I think it gives a nice broad perspective from about 1986 up to the present day of people who have been impacted, Americans who have been impacted by the works of Lewis.
Well, now, before concluding, let me have you take a few minutes to tell about your website that I mentioned during my introduction.
Okay, it's called Pondering Principles. And for me, focusing on principles is the key thing in life. What are the biblical principles for life? And so what I have at that website is a blog that does kind of try to focus on all aspects of life, how we should view things through the Christian faith. Now, there is a special emphasis in there on history, politics, government, but also a lot of cultural things and, you know, book reviews and various other things that I do on that particular blog. Once a week, I try to do a Lewis post, normally on Saturdays, whether I draw it from my book or from other writings of Lewis and commentary about him, but it's always fun. I always enjoy Saturday morning, first thing, getting my cup of coffee, sitting down and saying, okay, now what can I write about Lewis today? The site also has a thing you can click on called Great Quotes from Various Individuals Throughout History, and it has another section called Book Recommendations, and another place where you can go in and you can click on the various books that I have written prior to this time. This is the first one, obviously, that's outside of the American history specifically, the book on Lewis. But if you're interested in American history, I've got a book on Noah Webster. That was actually my doctoral dissertation. He's the guy who wrote the dictionary and became a Christian midlife, made a big change in his life. I have another book actually on the Clinton impeachment of President Clinton back in, around the turn of the century. I interviewed all the congressmen who went to the Senate to try to argue for him to be removed from office, and so I got their perspective on why. The name of that book, by the way, is called Mission Impeachable, which I thought was, you know, kind of, you know, somebody else gave me that title. I like that. Yeah. I did come up with my own title for the Noah Webster book. I call it Defining Noah Webster, which I think is really cute, since he wrote a dictionary. Okay, so The last book I wrote before my Lewis book was one on Ronald Reagan and a man named Whitaker Chambers, and kind of a comparison of two conservative icons politically and culturally in America. Not many people know about Whitaker Chambers, but they all know Reagan. So this is a way to introduce them to Chambers and show the connection between the two people. So that's what's at my website. And so I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to talk about it.
Good. And we'll have a link in the show notes for that. We encourage people to check that out where they can get an opportunity to read, you know, more about those books as well as the Lewis one and even purchase them there. And we'll have in the show notes a direct link to purchase America Discovers C.S. Lewis. Well, in closing, is there anything else that we haven't covered about your book? And what maybe final appeal do you have about those still unsure about buying a copy of that book, again called America Discovers C.S. Lewis?
Well, I won't make my final appeal, make me a millionaire. Okay, so we'll just pass over that right now. Okay, that's not the issue here. I don't expect it. But I do think what I have done here is I've found a niche that no one else has fully explored. It's been, you know, around the edges. People have commented on it, but it hasn't really been in full book form. I think there's valuable research here in the Lewis letters that I've gone through and pulled things out of. And I think just his connections with America for the first time do all come together in the book. On the back of the book, you can look and you can see I have recommendations. And the first one is from Walter Hooper, which I really appreciated him taking the time to do that. And what's fascinating to me is his last line here when he says, "I can honestly say I understand Lewis so much better having read this book." Mm-hmm. And that kind of startled me because he knew Lewis and I don't. So I appreciate that. I have Mark Knoll, who's a very famous Christian historian, and he makes a comment about, he says, Snyder's use of Lewis's correspondence with Americans, a special highlight in this helpful study. So I appreciate that. Now, Diana Glyer, who's a professor of English at, I almost forgot now. Oh,
Azusa.
Azusa Pacific. That's right. And she says, my writing is crisp, my research extensive, and focus strong and clear. And I appreciate that from someone like her because she's written a couple books on the Inklings, like, you know, The Company They Keep and Bandersnatch. So she, you know, she's a good Lewis scholar. And then Scott Key, who is at California Baptist, I know you know him, a professor of philosophy, and he's the director of the Academic Roundtable, the C.S. Lewis Foundation, and he also chimed in with some very nice comments about it. So I appreciate all this. And the next SenSuck Journal is going to have a review of my book, so I'm glad Crystal Hurd and others have picked up on that. I just hope that my book will never be considered a dated one. I think because it's historically grounded and all that, it's going to have relevance regardless of when you get it. But, you know, I obviously think you should get it right away.
That's right. Yeah. And if I recall, you referenced that the only kind of big picture approach to Lewis and in the realm that you are doing a much deeper look at is from 1975. And that was just before Lewis was getting more well-known and such. So, yeah, I guess I'm just mentioning that in passing to say, yes, definitely, this is a good, timely book that should be timeless, but don't waste any time in getting a copy. How's that?
That's pretty good. I couldn't have said it better.
Well, Alan, it's been a pleasure having you on All About Jack. Thanks for joining me.
I really appreciate being here. It's a wonderful opportunity. Thank you.
Thanks also goes to you, the listener, for joining me for my All About Jack podcast, which is a feature of my EssentialCSLewis.com website. All About Jack is also part of the Theology Mix podcast network. I'm William O'Flaherty, and my guest again was Dr. Alan Snyder, author of America Discovers C.S. Lewis. Be sure to check the show notes for a direct link to purchasing Alan's book, which again is called America Discovers C.S. Lewis. I also have a link to Dr. Snyder's website, Pondering Principles. The show notes can be found either at EssentialCSLewis.com or AllAboutJack.podbean.com. The Podbean location is where the podcast is most easily found and navigated. Again, that's AllAboutJack.podbean.com. Podbean is spelled P-O-D-B-E-A-N. The other location, EssentialCSLewis.com, highlights the most recent show on my main page and also has space dedicated to listing past shows and the notes for them. Additionally, you can find a variety of other material on Lewis there, including a popular series that explores quotations attributed to him that may not be from him. Be sure to stop by my site to listen to other interviews and special podcasts on a variety of topics mostly directly related to Lewis. And as mentioned in the interview, I'll have a link in the show notes to a couple of things that was mentioned. Walter Hooper, I did an interview with him. And then Alan also mentioned Abigail Santa Maria's book about C.S. Lewis's wife, Joy. There'll be a link to that in the show notes. And in case you didn't know, I occasionally post previously released podcasts on my iTunes feed that you can also find at the Podbean address. If you don't know how to find the show on iTunes, then be sure to check the show notes for a direct link. Again, those notes can be found either at EssentialCSLewis.com or allaboutjack.podbean.com. If you do visit me via iTunes, please consider rating my podcast, as this can help others find it there. Finally, let me remind you, or in case you didn't know, I have a book called C.S. Lewis Goes to Hell, A Companion and Study Guide to the Screwtape Letters. It's available online at Amazon. Paperback is $14.99, and at last check, the Kindle edition was just $5.49. Buying the book is a great way to help support my podcast. You can learn more about my book by visiting ScrewtapeCompanion.com. There you can get an immediate download of a free 20-page PDF sample of the book. Again, that's ScrewtapeCompanion.com. Thanks again for listening to All About Jack.